Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
Hey y'all, welcome back to Dialed In with Jake and Zach. One quick moment with our friends from Law Chevrolet here before we get this episode 19 kicked off.
Hey guys, it's Dylan here at Law Chevrolet Buick. Man, what an amazing year it was. 2018 was truly awesome. The support that we had from our drag racing community was tremendous. Whether it was coming and purchasing a vehicle from us or sending somebody in that you knew or even making sure that you got your service work done here. Guys, we truly appreciate that. With that being said, we're going to continue what we did in 2018. If you're part of our drag racing community and you come and purchase a vehicle from us, we're going to give you $600 on a Visa gift card. It can be used for whatever you want it to be used for. If you're like me, that's some buyback money. So, like I said, we appreciate everything you guys have done for us in 2018. Let's make 2019 a great year again. So make sure to give me a call here at 812-897-2220 or just visit lawchevy.com. We'd be glad to take care of you guys. Thank you.
All right, how about that? Episode 19 is live, and the most recent $5,000 no split practice tree winner is on the line. Zach, what's going on, man?
Man, yeah, what a day. Awesome. I'm still kind of thinking about did it actually happen, and as I glance over in the glorious studio of my kitchen, I'm looking at the big check that I took home. It actually did happen. It was a great day, awesome event. Can't believe I won a no split final. I didn't win a race all year last year. Kept getting to the semifinals and quarterfinals and losing and breaking stuff. So felt pretty good to kick off 2019 with a win like that. Yeah, I don't know. It was phenomenal. I got lots of people to thank, so I'm just going to go into it. I got to thank my wife. Kristen kept me sane. I had one entry left going into second round. I bought four. I bought back three of them, and I lost all three in the buyback round. So I had one left, and I'm sitting there with my head down thinking, man, I just blew all this money, and I can't buy a round. And from that point forward, the wind light didn't turn back off. And most of it was because she kept me just kind of even keel and kept me from getting too excited and just went up there and kept doing my best every time, and that's all you can do. I want to thank all the people that helped me out. You know, Siebert Performance. This is Bracket Racing Elite. The practice paid off big time this weekend. You know, been hitting the practice tree a lot, following the exercises that are on there, and managed to turn it into a $5,000 windfall. So, yeah, great time. You did very good too. We our little section there, we had it rolling for a while.
Yeah. So, were you prepared to make a deal at four cars?
At four cars, I would have made a deal. It was Mr. Foley made it clear as soon as he walked up that was
hold on a second. I ran Mr. Foley at eight, and we both sat down. And I said, "Listen, this is what I'm willing to do if you want to do it." I said 20%, but we don't split the rest of the way through. So that's kind of my fault. But,
I see.
But we were going to cojone up and try to take home some money, and it backfired immensely.
Yeah, I mean, and it was all good. You know, whenever that was said, then I sat down for my semifinal matchup, and they asked us what we were going to do after it would already, you know, we had already said no split, and then we're half of the semifinal sitting there. So I just, you know, let's just run it at that point. You know, got lucky, and the light turned on again, and got into the final against Mr. Eric Burnett, a nice guy. And, you know, I offered to go $500 different and just both of us have a great day and make a lot of money. And he thought about it. You know, he didn't just say he didn't want to split right away. There was some gears turning for a second, and I thought a counter was coming for maybe running for a little bit more different than that. And he said, no, why don't we just, let's just not split. Let's just run it how it is. And that's perfectly fine. You know, that's what we came there for. And if that's the way he wants to do it, then that's fine. Now, when he went and sat down on the chair that I've been sitting in the whole time, the last four or five rounds.
Yeah, you said pump the brakes.
I said, well, I mean, that's fine if he wanted that lane, but we are at least going to call heads or tails to see who got to sit there. And he very nicely said, no, that's fine. You want this seat, you can have it. I'll go to the other side. So, you know, stand up, dude, and let go. And I can't even tell you. I think I was 11. He was red and light came on. And, you know, great way to start 2019. Man, I'm so glad that it ended up working out like that. And then I didn't even realize I was going to get another entry into the million shootout. I had already bought one. Turned out where I could have, the way I fell on the ladder after doing that, I could have potentially ran myself third round, but I screwed that up right off the bat and lost in my free entry first round. But then managed to take the other one to the final. So, you know, got into another final, almost got myself into the million. James West, who is awesome. You guys that don't know James West's name, you will. He's already won some races, and I'm sure he's going to win a lot more. He's as tough as they come, and he got me in the final. I'm sure in the million-dollar race, we'll have some win lights in the Black Vega of James West Lane this year. He's a very tough customer. So happy that it was us two in the final. You know, couldn't have lost to a better guy there. So, man, it was a great day. Well put on event. As always, had a great time seeing everybody and just hanging out and just, we're just happy as can be.
Yeah, and, you know, while you're on the kick, you might as well roll through some results here a little bit. It was, how many entries they say? 620?
620 entries in the main event, so that upped the purse from the advertised 4,000 to 5,000 to win. He kicked more all the way back down the payout, so awesome job by Dragster Sale, Don O'Neill, JB, and all the guys, Mark, everybody that was involved, keeping everything organized and running. Great way to pay back the racers there for showing up and entering, everybody jumping in a bunch of times. So you know, some guy named Zach Schlumpf won the main event. Eric Burnett was runner-up. Now, they had bottom bulb ran separate in that race, so Christopher Martin, he took the win on the bottom bulb portion of the main event, and the runner-up was Nick Gowan. And then they had the warm-up race that happened before the main event. They were giving away entries to a lot of great races that are coming up this year. Tyler Sizemore, he took the win, got himself in the triple 20s at the million. Jared Fulcher, runner-up, did the same. Doug Foley Jr. got himself in the Vegas, I believe, is that the triple 20s as well? And Brett Williamson took a no box nationals entry. So those guys going to a lot of big races for free.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Vegas is 20s. I probably should do my research. I know the million is 25s, but yeah. But nonetheless, at that rate, it doesn't really matter because, you know, got a shot at it for $30 per hit practice tree entry. So that's definitely a good deal for that, the Dragster for Sale guys threw out there for us.
For sure. And so then after that, in the million shootouts, in the first one, Cody Wiggins took the win for Lee Neumeier. A runner-up, so Cody getting an entry to the million, Lee pocketing $500, and then in the other million, as we already said, James West from Tennessee took the win over yours truly. So they did a pretty cool deal. Boxo Toolbox put up a toolbox that was full of tools, and what they did is they took everybody that bought back and lost had their cards put into a bucket. They drew one out for the toolbox, they drew out several of them and ran for the toolbox is how they did it. And the winner there was Chris Mullins. And then they had the race pack runoff. That was all of the money winners for the night got put together, ran off on a ladder for the race pack to the winner. And Chase Murray took the win there, and the runner-up was Carson Griffith, who he took home the race pack pit mat. And I don't think I mentioned, I forgot, in the warm-up race, the bottom bulb portion, our honored guest on the show today, Michael Beard, took the win on the warm-up side of the bottom bulb. So, great event, awesome time, 5th annual, can't wait for the 6th annual to get here again. If you weren't there, go next year, don't miss it, it's awesome, best practice tree race going, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree completely, and I think Carson Griffith can use that new race pack pit mat for that awesome new Danny Nelson shorter car he's building. I'm not sure if you're keeping track of that on Facebook, but that thing's going to be a work of art. We'll be right back here in just a minute after we have a short break, a little commercial about the Southern Big Buck Nationals coming up here.
Hi, this is Cody Polodge with Flicker Promotions. Just want to tell y'all about the 6th annual Southern Big Buck Nationals, February 8th through the 10th at No Problem Raceway, Belrose, Louisiana. There will be an all-run 3-grander. Friday night, box and no box will be separated till 8 cars or less. Box weekend entry is $375, which includes two 10s. The no box weekend entry is $175, which includes two 3-granders. There will be a 64-car box shootout for $10,000, no box 32-car shootout for $2,500. If anybody has any questions, please contact me, 225-776-6818. Or make sure you like us on Facebook at Flicker Promotions.
So on the phone with us today is not only the promoter or co-promoter of Loose Rocker, but the 2003 IHRA Stock World Champion, 16-time track champion, 4-time IHRA National Event winner, 7-time Stock Super Stock Class winner, 3-time National Record holder in the same class, 5-time Driver of the Year, and somehow he became a 2-time Rookie of the Year. Michael Beard, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. You guys have definitely done some research because I don't even remember half of that stuff, but that's why I got to write it down somewhere so I can even remember any of it.
So a 2-time Rookie of the Year, how does that happen? I'm guessing once in stock and once in super stock?
Probably Rookie of the Year at a local track, could have been different classes. So.
Yeah, anyway, it's not important. Anyway.
But that spiel there sounded like a really good segue for like some trivia contest type stuff.
Oh, we're going to get there here in just a minute. But first,
it's me, if I was a two-time rookie of the year, I probably would not have known that.
Hey, that's all right. So speaking of rookie of the year, where did you get your start in drag racing, and how has it kind of led you to where you're at now? We'll get into kind of what you're into now later on. But, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I got started at Beaver Springs Dragway when I had my driver's license for 16 days. It was a year or so after Dad had disappeared for a loaf of bread one afternoon and was gone all day long. Came home, we're like, where were you all day? Just out driving around, and I stumbled across Beaver Springs Dragway, and we're like, what's that? So we all piled into the truck and went to the track the next week to watch. And the week after that, Dad decided to race his truck, a 318 four-speed 74 Dodge D200. So it was not the fastest or best bracket car in the world, not even close. Well, he had raced like 20 years before that. He's out of the sport for a really long time. So when we got back into it, it was bracket racing, and it was my job to figure out what all this bracket racing stuff was about. I was that kid that got picked last in gym class a lot. So it was probably a good thing for me that I was able to latch onto the numbers game, the strategy of the sport, and concentrated on that when I finally did get my driver's license and started out with a 71 Duster with a slant six. So it was also a really slow vehicle and something that you just hit the tree and tried to drive the stripe as best you could. So no shifting involved, you weren't doing burnouts. It was concentrate on the basics. And maybe that's why I'm decent on the tree to this day. That was the major focus point for me when I got started.
So not to cut Zach off here, but speaking of slow, unconventional bracket cars, double F stock automatic Turismo with a 2.2 liter engine.
That's really fun to show up at Norwalk on a Wednesday night on what's basically street night. They'd have some classes that allowed slicks and open headers. And you get some kids walk by in the staging lanes, and they're like, oh, mid-15s. That's pretty cool. It's turbo car, right? No. Oh, it's nitrous car. Like, no, it's two-barrel, Holley Weber carburetor. Then they got interested. They're like, this thing's really fast for what it is. Been for sale, and a couple of guys have said they were going to send some money, and that hasn't materialized yet. So that thing may get some mothballs kicked out of it this year and go play in some local stock, super stock combo stuff, because it is dirt cheap to race, and the Velaria spent a whole lot of time broken in the last 2 years. I did get my ATI converter in. Now I just need to get it in the car, but got a little bit of time before our season starts. But should I have any problems with the Velaria, I've actually got a backup car. I just haven't laid eyes on it in several years, but that might happen.
What is the national record in FFSA?
Couldn't tell you. I'd have to look it up, but I can guarantee you that the Turismo ain't anywhere near it.
Like, yeah. The whole,
that car, well, that was my first foray into class racing back at Beaver Springs Dragway, where I grew up. For whatever reason, one weekend, Billy Neese, a former NHRA Division I stock eliminator champion with a six-cylinder Nova, it was a V-stock automatic car, he showed up at Beaver Springs one weekend. And I walked up to him in the staging lanes. I'd read about him in National Dragster magazine. I'm like, this guy's a hero. That's awesome. And I walk up to him and said, hi, Mr. Neese. How's the stock eliminator circuit going? And he's one of those Jersey guys, finger on your chest, in your face, just for a normal conversation. And he's like, Mr. Neese is my father. I haven't earned that respect yet. Season's going terrible. You need to be in a stock eliminator car. What? So he drags me over to his truck. And back then, they didn't have the classification guides online. He had the book. You used to have to pay NHRA $2 per sheet for each and every combination that there was to get all the tech specs. He had all of them. And he said, you're going to get into stock eliminator. What kind of cars do you like? Well, I like Mopars. Well, if you got to run a Mopar. So he flips through his book. How much money you got? I don't have any. Okay, you're going to run a front-wheel drive car.
For the record, the double F stock automatic record is 995 in the eighth mile.
I didn't even know if they had eighth mile records.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
I guess they must not have any opportunities to set records in the eighth mile, because I actually have gone faster than that.
Well, the iCrate motor class is currently held 694 with a 6 at 96 miles an hour. I'm not sure if that sounds familiar at all.
I know what the issue is. NHRA had consolidated the front wheel drive classes years ago. In NHRA, it's a D front stock car. F front stock automatic is the class that it falls into in the old IHRA stock eliminator, where it had a 1630 index. The same car in NHRA, same horsepower factor, weights. Actually, horsepower factors may be a smidge off, but the car's always been heavy for the class anyway. But anyway, you go from a 1630 index to a 1560 index. Same car.
To go from being a second under to maybe a tenth under.
I have been 104 under at three different tracks on the IHRA index. It's an index runner at most of the NHRA event. So it is what it is. You either got to figure out a way to get, I'd have to look the numbers up, but get about 200 pounds out of it, or add about 350 pounds of steel plate in it somewhere to get it to the next class. But we get, I forget what the index is in maybe e-front stock. I think it goes to like a 17 something. So it would actually probably be a really good e-front car in NHRA under the index, you know, because you could actually get to minimum weight. I just never wanted to run it that heavy. But it had been 1526 or 1524, something like that. Pretty good for a little 2.2 carbureted car.
And it's for sale.
For sale. Yeah. It's not on sale.
Right. That's very impressive out of that small of a motor and front wheel drive. So as we know now, Michael, you have you've gotten into the race promoting side now for the last several years, one of the top race promoters out there. Tell us about the first race that you promoted and how that went, and maybe some things that you learned along the way.
Well, honestly, the first race that I promoted was, I think I tried to do a $5,000 no box race at Beaver Springs when I was a kid, and let's just say that failed miserably. So a couple years after that, I tried to do a stock super stock combo race, and that failed miserably. So yeah, we didn't do a whole lot of race promotion early on. Really, how all this came about was my now partner, Anthony Walton from Walton Trailer Sales, he had contacted me years and years and years ago about doing some event flyers. You know, so we just met on the internet. His local track was Coastal Plains Raceway, and he wanted to bring some big money races to his home track. That's all it was about. And I'd done a couple flyers for him, and he had actually started an event called the Fall Footbreak Frenzy. It was the first weekend in November, and I think it started out as a couple of five granders and then grew to like three five granders kind of deal. Did that for a couple of years. At about that time, Piedmont Dragway, which Bob Harris had started the original $20,000 footbreak race of Thanksgiving weekend. Piedmont Dragway had done that race for, I think, 8 years, but the track had changed ownership at some point, and they decided that that event did not make them enough money, and they decided they were going to change it to 2 3-granders. How are you going to get guys from New Jersey to go to North Carolina Thanksgiving weekend for 2 3-granders? Anthony and I are bumming around going, man, somebody's got to do the 20. Somebody got to do the 20. It's like, you want to rent a racetrack? No, I want to go race at the 20. Somebody's got to do the 20. All right. So we're running Coastal Plains Dragway. Fall Footbreak Frenzy 3 was Anthony Walton and Michael Beard. And we had 191 cars, our very first event. And we said, I think we got something here. You know, we weren't reinventing anything. You know, it was a little bit different format, but the $20,000 footbreak race Thanksgiving weekend was always something that guys look forward to. So basically, we were just picking up on a successful event that somebody else had given up on. And did Coastal Plains one more year, and then our third year together. And so by this time, we're our second year together, we were officially Loose Rocker Promotions then. We ended up taking the event back to Piedmont Dragway. That's where people wanted to be, and the car count has just gone up and up and up and up until this year, which was only hampered by weather, and it's still a really good event. But our second year together, I was on my way from Ohio back to when I was living in North Carolina, going back to North Carolina, I'm like over Christmas break, and Anthony calls me and says, hey, they dropped the door car race. What? They used to do a $20,000 door car race at Piedmont. It's not on the schedule. I said, check that and check it again. Like, I'm telling you, they don't have the door car race. Well, I guess we're doing a door car race too.
So, sound familiar?
The American Slammer Nationals was born, presented by McCarty Auto Parts. So that's where that one came from. You know, so basically, once again, we picked up on an event that somebody just simply gave up on that we knew could do well. That one we started at Fayetteville. That one eventually went back to Piedmont Dragway as well. That's where our customers really enjoy racing that time of year. And then the St. Patrick's Classic, which we've got coming up this year, March 15th through 17th at Virginia Motorsports Park. That's one that Anthony had started on his own as well at Coastal Plains Dragway. I came into the picture on that one, would have been, I think, third year. You know, he used to do it in partnership with the racetrack, and then Loose Rocker took it over. And when we moved that to Virginia Motorsports Park the first year, it picked up 150 cars. Like the track, the location.
That place is awesome.
Oh, and it's even better now, which is scary. Last year, brand new concrete. I mean, brand new. 10-day old concrete with a forecast that most guys would just say, look, we can't race this weekend. It's going to be too cold. St. Patrick's Classic, House of Pain Performance, Calvert Kettlecorn helping us out. We went and did that race knowing how cold it was going to be, but we didn't figure that we had the window to run 3 straight days. I said, we've got enough time in terms of the weather window and temperatures. We can finish 2 races over the course of 3 days. Not an ideal circumstance, but there's one thing. We're not smart enough to ever give up. We're going to try. Even if things look really, really bad, we're going to try and give the racers as good of a deal as we possibly can.
And, you know, I think that's why there's a lot of success in your guys' corner, because, you know, if you go into the gates at a loose rocker event, you know exactly what you're walking into. There's no backdoor deals. There's no sketchiness. You know, this is how it's going to be. This is what it's going to pay. And if you don't like it, don't tow. You're not going to hurt our feelings kind of thing. You know, and I think that's definitely one of the characters that attracts people to the loose rocker events.
Yeah, the biggest challenge of sketchiness is Mother Nature. That has been our toughest thing to deal with, and it's only really cropped up the last 2 years. You know, over the course of 3 days, yeah, a lot of times there's a chance something is going to happen or one of the 3 days, but she has not been real kind the last 2 years in particular, and last year was worse than the year before. You know, but at this House of Pain St. Patrick Classic, that Friday, 10-day-old concrete, it is brand spanking new. Alan Carpenter is absolute magic. Was on the track drag for 3 days putting rubber down. Nobody knew what that place could handle until we actually did it. When we were down to about 16 cars in Top ET, we run Top ET and Foot Brake. So we're running 2 classes in 1 day. Temperatures are already in the mid-30s by this time. And Alan said, it's going to be the last round for the night. No problem. Hey, we actually got further than I thought in terms of the time of night. I'm always looking at hourly temperatures on the forecast. Said, we can finish this tomorrow morning. He stood out in front of the tower and watched. Not a wiggle out of anybody. Everybody's dead on, a couple thou under. And he said, hell, run them. I'm like, all right. I mean, we're watching them like a hawk, but that track never gave up. 29 degrees in the finals.
That's awesome.
Still going dead on. Unbelievable. Yeah. So we took what we thought you could only get 2 races done over the span of 3 days. We finished 2 races, and we still had all Sunday. I'm like, well, guess we're doing another race. We ran 3 races in 3 days in some brutally cold temperatures.
Yeah, I remember the talk leading up to that event and the forecast, looking into it and thinking, you know, there was some talk about, will the track hold it, will it not? And then afterwards, it was, and during, it was nothing but praise, and, you know, it was stuck good and everybody had a great time. So that's awesome that was able to be pulled off, because, you know, nobody wants to slip and slide down the racetrack. Jake and I have been there a couple times ourselves in too cold a conditions. So one thing I wanted to ask you about on the promoting side, what are some things that have happened or that happened regularly, maybe behind the scenes whenever you're promoting event that people, you know, that people don't see that help make it successful?
I'd say a really big part of it, you know, obviously besides our sponsors, the tracks are a big part of it. Ending up at places like Virginia Motorsports Park, Piedmont Dragway, their staffs are great to work with. They run their races very much like we run our race. So we're all pulling in the same direction. But a key component that I'd really like to mention is our announcer, Ron Huntley Jr. We stole him from Norwalk years ago. He does all of our events. There is no one out there more passionate about this sport. This is somebody that does race on his own every once in a while. He's got a Chevy Spark, and he will race that thing on purpose. That's the kind of passion that we're talking about. But he knows our racers. And if he doesn't know somebody in particular, you'll find out about him. He will know them before it's all over.
Yeah, Ron's incredible. And I think you and I had that conversation that, you know, I think the best announcing duo I've ever heard at a bracket race is Ron and Skeet Pete go on the mic. And that is just, you just let those guys go and just listen, and you have all day entertainment, and you don't have to watch a car on the track even.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing about announcing, is you need to be able to be somewhere where you cannot see the action, cannot see the scoreboards, and know what's going on. Know who's on the racetrack. You know, it sounds really, really simple, but I've been places where you're sitting back in the pits and it's the blue Chevy Camaro and the black Ford Mustang in the left lane wins. Well, which one was in which lane? Who was driving it? And what did they run? You know, that's always been a pet peeve of mine in race results when they're reported in writing. And, you know, this guy won stock eliminator and he had this reaction time and he went this ET at this mile an hour. What was he dialed? That's like giving a golf score without knowing what par is.
Yeah, and you know, that's not coming blind either. You know, you've done quite a bit of announcing yourself. You know, I don't remember the exact events, but you're well seasoned on that end of the spectrum. So you're allowed to pick it apart as much as you want.
And I'm allowed on the mic at our events for anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes when Iron Tank actually to be emptied once a day. That man does not take a break. And when he does, he'll be standing next to you waiting impatiently so you can give him the microphone back so he can talk to his people.
Yeah, his endurance is incredible.
Well, that's from being at Norwalk. So that guy has done the Halloween Classic. Enough said. That's all you need to know. He's actually handling a lot of the best losing package stuff, or at least giving a starting point. So he's saving me a lot of time. You know, if I'm caught up in the staging lanes or handling something with a customer, you know, I know that the race is still going on. You know, he can take care of stuff. You know, the world doesn't come to an end if I'm not micromanaging something. So we've got a really good team all the way around.
Well, and back to that whole, you know, taking care of your racers and stuff, you might not have just caught that, but, you know, from being on the inside and looking out, you know, you didn't say taking care of a racer. That is a customer, and that is exactly how they deserve to be treated, you know, and that's something that gets forgotten quite a bit. You know, yeah, they're racers, but they bought your business. They are a customer, and you need to go above and beyond to satisfy that. And that's back to what I was saying with Loose Rocker. You know exactly what you're getting whenever you roll in the gate.
Well, we are racers ourselves, so basically we put together the kinds of races that we want to go to, and it's never hurt my feelings when somebody copied what we're doing. I'm like, cool, now I can go race at that. You know, if people copy what we're doing, like, it was absolutely unheard of to see $100 round money starting third round winner on a $5,000 to win race. Nobody did that. Like, that didn't even get copied until last year. You know, that we've always tried to spread things out a bit because we know that there's only going to be one winner. We want people, you know, our 5-10 and 5 format is $290 for the weekend, all 3 days paying $100 round money. You know, you can accidentally win enough rounds on one day or just go a couple rounds, a couple days and pay for a big chunk of your expenses. Either you paid your entry fee off, you paid some diesel fuel. You know, I need you to make enough money, you know, one, not spend too much money getting there and entering the races and buying back. But I want you to win enough money, too. Yeah, maybe you didn't cover everything. It didn't cost you any more than dinner and a movie when it's all over, you know, because that ain't, you know, but yeah, I need people to have enough money left over to go race somewhere else next week and the week after that. And maybe you can come to one of our other races a couple months down the road. You know, that the sport needs to be sustainable. If I take every penny that you have and every penny that you have saved for months on end and you blow it all on a weekend and you don't get a decent return on that. Yeah, sometimes we have bad weekends. Sometimes we have good weekends. But on an average weekend, if I take all your money right now, nobody's going to see you for a month or two or 3 months. That's not good for the sport.
And that's depending on if your wife finds out or not.
I've got a really good wife in multiple respects there. One, she works at our Loose Rocker events. My wife, Jill, Anthony's wife, Stacy, they do a phenomenal job. We really threw them to the wolves at the very first event because we know what we're doing. So we're, you know, at the event trying to figure out who's doing what. Okay, you two are in charge of the money. What?
Okay, bye.
So complete meltdown panic mode for about 30 seconds. And then they took charge and boom, it has been right. You know, you take a school teacher and, you know, business-minded person, OCD, a pair, boom, it's done right. But on the personal level, my wife has never asked me, are you going racing this weekend? A long time ago, she used to ask me, where are you going racing this weekend? And about a year into things, she usually knew where I was going before I did because she would just look at my schedule online.
Yeah.
She's very supportive that way.
So back in the Beaver Springs Dragway days, whenever you decided to put on your promoter hat, what did you see? I know you're an observer first and then you act upon that second. What did you see that needed change that made you make that decision to jump into that pool?
Again, my first foray wasn't a success, but again, that was like a 5 grand no box race. Really, there wasn't a lot of big money racing hardly at all. And in terms of bottom bulb stuff, there was one out there in the Northeast, and that was the $10,000 heavy foot brake nationals at Maple Grove Raceway. So you've got one shot a year. And I thought, okay, well, why don't we just cut everything in half and we'll try that. That didn't work, but you didn't have as many avenues for promotion back then and all. So, but I think I learned a lot at Beaver Springs Dragway on all kinds of different levels, from racing there to a couple of those failed promotions that Beaver Bob just let me try. And those weekends would usually end up with, there, you learned a lesson. Yep. I've always said I hate learning things. That means something went wrong. You know, but I used to do a newsletter for the racetrack when I was in high school. When the internet became a big thing, I did Beaver Springs Dragway's website to get started. And I started doing their track schedule brochures and things on down the road, which I guess led into the graphics end of things. Was announcing on Friday nights. And then Beaver Bob took me with him to an IHRA track operators meeting. And I got a chance to meet Bill Bader. And after the meeting, Beaver Bob and Bill Bader and I were all sitting down, and he looked me in the eye and said, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Working and racing? Yeah, I'm fresh out of college at this point. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And he said, I could use a technical person like you. And I guess the rest is history there. I went to work for IHRA in the Bader era, worked for Bill for 2.5 years, got to do IHRA's website, ended up working in Drag Review magazine, got to do cover designs for a short time, did writing in the magazine, did a little bit of photography here and there, got to work at the bracket finals events, started out just stubbing tickets at the gate, you know, before the days of wristbands, got to announce at a couple of IHRA bracket finals events. But I think one of the coolest things about working at IHRA and just learning, soaking things up from Bader, because I found out on my second day of work, because there was hours on the door and it said, you know, 8 to 5 or whatever. So 5 o'clock, I guess we're done. So I went out and I was informed on the second day that, one, we worked till 6, not 5. And actually, I found out later you went a lot past, a lot of time.
would you say the Bader era of IHRA was its height?
Oh, there's absolutely zero question about that.
I'm a little young to remember all of that. So, you know, I hear all of these rumblings about, you know, when Bader had IHRA and all of that. And then they had a falling out with NHRA and all that good stuff.
Yeah. But the secretary informed me that before you go home, you have to say goodnight to Bill. So you walk down that hallway and usually kind of hope that he was on the phone, so you just wave and he waved back and be on your way. Or if he's not on the phone, he may wave you in, have a seat. Or sometimes he'd be on the phone, wave you in, have a seat while you're waiting for him to finish up his conversation. Then he gets done and he can't even remember what he wanted to talk to you about. And then he would start telling you a story about his promoting Sandusky Speedway or the monster truck deal him and Aaron Polburn did years ago. I learned so much stuff in those after hours things. You absolutely cannot replace the stuff that I learned at IHRA, both on the clock and off. Absolutely phenomenal. You know, and I took that stuff from my roots at Beaver Springs Dragway, at IHRA. I had really gotten to missing racing. I was still able to run some Wednesday nights at Norwalk, just playing around with my street truck or play with the Turismo or whatever. But I really wanted to race again. I left IHRA to go work for Quaker City Raceway, where I was there for another year and a half or so. I took Beaver Springs Dragway's Friday night street legal bracket racing program and dropped that on a Wednesday night at Quaker. No promotion, except it was on Quaker's website. And it was in our track schedule brochure. And the first night, it's raining everywhere but at the racetrack. And we have 47 cars. And track owner said, see, I told you it wouldn't work. So hold on, just wait. Within 3 months, we're pulling 150 cars, 400 spectators on a Wednesday night. And sometimes you got to slug through the weather, wait things out, work on things, grow programs. And that's what's happened with our November races that we talked about at Piedmont, the American Door Slammer Nationals, McCarty Auto Parts, ATI Fall Footbrake Frenzy. Those things all started out pretty humble roots, you know, a 5, a 20, and a 5. Well, that round money had started out low to begin with. And we went up to the $100 round money on all 3 days, or the 2 5-granders. And then the 20-granders started out at, say, $150. And then the car count went up the next year. We raised the round money, and the car count went up. We raised the purse. Car count went up. We raised the purse, I think, 5 or 6 times in the last 8 years, 8 years, 9 years. This past year, we went from a 5, 20, and 5 for 380 for the weekend to a 10, 20, and 10 for 380 for the weekend. We didn't do that. The racers did that. Because those guys show up consistently year after year and they bring a buddy with them, that car count went up at both of those events for 5 or 6 straight years. That's why they get purse increase. The racers make this stuff happen. Without racers, you got nothing.
Right. Very true. And you know, you've seen this sport from a lot of different perspectives, you know, from a racer and promoter and somebody working it for the track. So in your opinion, what is one of the things today that's hurting our sport? If you could change, you would change.
I think simple oversaturation. There's too many events going on now of certain varieties, certain areas, certain times of the year. You know, all good things in moderation. You know, there's nothing wrong with any one event in and of itself when you look at the entire season. Several years ago, I started keeping track of all the big money races, mainly for my own use, because I wanted to know when a good time would be to schedule our loose rocker races. So I started a master schedule that had all the NHRA national and divisionals on it, all the IHRA stuff, all the other big money races, any other real big things of note. That master schedule now, I just said, well, if I was doing it, may as well share it with everybody. That way, maybe people would stop scheduling on top of each other and things like that.
Nope.
denied. No. So I've got something like 260 events right now listed on my master schedule. And I know that there's a bunch of stuff that I don't even have on here yet.
Michael, there's 52 weeks in a year.
That you can race? Oh, so better shrink that up a little bit. Yeah, it's really interesting. And I'd gotten a couple of promoters together. Every once in a while, I'll see a couple guys schedule on top of each other, and they may not even know about it. And I was able to intervene on one of those. It was actually guys that I think know each other, and they happen to schedule on the same weekend in the same region, not that far apart. And like, y'all need to talk and explain to them what was going on. They talked and they ended up getting on different weekends. So that was good.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, it should be. I've had other conversations where they're like, they're like 3 hours away. That's not going to affect us at all. Okay, so, but they didn't warn you.
So, you know, you're known for not only your incredible skill behind the wheel of a race car and all of that good stuff with promoting, but, you know, you sit back and observe quite a bit on social media and whatnot. And whenever you speak up, you usually mean it. This past week, we had a pretty interesting debacle going on in your Facebook page. And, you know, the pre-entry stuff, I agree, has completely gotten out of hand. I know it wasn't directed at any one person, but, you know, kind of just give us your take on it.
Yeah, again, it was a firestorm that I didn't mean to create on Facebook this weekend. I saw, people probably wouldn't even believe it, but I saw an announcement from a local track for Lobuck races for like 9 months from now, opening up for pre-entry. What? Why? It's not any one race, but it's the fact that you've got everything from mega buck races, which I totally understand. Again, you take something like the Spring Fling, and they had some issues with having too many cars. It's a great thing when you can say, I've got too many customers, and they've had to cap races. There's several promoters that have put caps on races to try to keep time schedules manageable. In my opinion, supply and demand will typically take care of that. But, you know, again, pre-entry in general, no problem. I've pre-entered at World Foot Brake Challenge every year, and then Southern Foot Brake Challenge came out. The old Jim Harrington race used to be pre-entry deal. But it was like 2 races a year. My issue with pre-entry has become the number of races that are doing it, not only from the big races, but it's trickled down to low buck, local level track stuff. It's not even outside promoters. And just everybody wants your money now. I mean, that's in one race. That's fine. You know, a month out, 2 months out, that's fine. You got ones that are 6 months, 9 months out in advance anymore. And you get a bunch of those on top of each other. You know, believe it or not, I'm really not that organized. So I had to organize things a little bit. I'm a geek here. So I had to print out a little checklist that has January through December on it. And Kia, Bank of America, Capital One card, Verizon, my mortgage. I have all of my bills listed out here so I can check them off so I remember to pay everything. So I'm not on auto pay on anything. I can pay all of my bills. So let's say I've got 8 or 10 things on my list here, the biggies for the month. Well, I can pay all that in a month. I can't pay January, February, March, and April's of all those in January, that's a cash flow problem. I can pay month to month. That's fine. So if you're trying to get into the racing season, you may be like, I had to buy a converter this one. You know, some winters I may be doing a trans, a rear, getting, you know, freshening the motor. People actually freshen motors now and then. I usually just run until they break.
Me too.
Same thing with rear end, transmissions, everything else. You know, throw gas in it and change oil a couple times a year. I saw that discussion on we'll talk about social media. I actually stayed out of that one. Somebody said, how often do you change your oil? Sorry, I know this is a total way off aside from everything else, but it made me laugh because years ago I asked an engine builder, how often should I change my oil? He said, every 30 runs. I said, Tim, I'm not changing my oil every week. Just looked at me. Double enter for 3 or 4 days, you're putting 35 runs on the car. Tim.
Well, maybe if you're Mike Beard.
I need a X number of runs or, you know, months or something here, not runs. But anyway, so you've got all of these kind of outlays at the beginning of the season. Like, yeah, Mother Nature hasn't been real nice the last couple years. Been kind of bucks down. I'm still a pickup and open trailer guy. The open trailer that I haul around, I won in a shootout when I was a kid. I didn't have the money to buy the trailer. I won the thing. I put tires on it every once in a while. You know, they don't have a lot of expendable income to go throw around. I'm using, you know, when I'm in the middle of the season, I'm using this week's money to go to this week's race. Next week, I'll use next week's money to go to next week's race. So if I've got 2, 3, 6 events that want pre-entry money now, if I enter all these races that I want to go to, I don't have the money to go to this week's race, next week's race, and week after that. That's where I have a problem.
Yeah, you could sit around the house and say, well, I don't have the money to go race this week, but I've got all these entries for, you know, October, and it's May.
Yeah, again, right. That is the root of my issue with all of it. If you take any one race in and of itself, fine. It's all of it together has created, in my opinion, a cash flow issue. If you've got the money, God bless you. I have no problem with that at all. People work hard, have good jobs. You got the money, want to spend it, rock on. Do it.
And Michael, I think you know just as well as I do, there's in our business, you know, there's 45 people maybe that can do that. And that is it. And I think this year you're going to see a lot of those guys that have been doing it that really shouldn't or can't. You're going to see that drop off. And, you know, and I hate to see something like that happen. And I think that's what you're trying to get across here. That's going to be the biggest issue here.
I've had my share of gone to races that I should not have.
What do you think about, like, in my opinion, I think that, okay, you want to do a pre-entry and pay ahead of time, and maybe that would help somebody out as far as spacing out or making payments. But then this customer that decides to go to your race and shows up at the gate and has to pay $100 more to get in. I have a little bit of a problem with that, because that's customers doing the same thing that the other person did. They're coming to your race to support it, but now they have to pay more because they didn't pay you 4 months ahead of time. What's your opinion on that?
I'm not going to get into how other people want to promote stuff. Again, World Footbrake Challenge is one of the originators of that kind of thing. Hey, it saves me $100 to pre-enter. I know I'm going. Unless my stuff is broke, I'm going. Usually I break my stuff when I'm there. But you know, so again, if it's one, not a problem. It's having so many of them to deal with. Now, from Loose Rocker Promotions, we do a discount deal, but it's open to everybody. We don't do pre-entries at our races. And somebody pointed out, they brought up a screenshot, one of the old ATI Bigfoot 40 grander flyers, and it was 3 40 granders for $650, cap of 400 entries, pre-enter here. He's like, you can't be against pre-entries, you did it. I said, yeah, that was an old flyer, because that was put out in like December or January or something, and by the end of January, I said, I hate pre-entries. Why would I make my customers do that? And what we did was we did away with the pre-entry, and without pre-entry, obviously you can't have a cap on the race. I said, well, tell you what, instead of having a cap on the race, if we get more than the number of cars that we set for a cap, we'll pay you more. We'll just give it back to the racer. It's fine. And Galen Rollinson's doing that with his Footbrake 150. You know, with pre-entry races, a lot of times you'll have people that have to withdraw for whatever reason. So it's really tricky to actually get the number of cars at the racetrack that you set as a cap or a goal. You know, there's some pretty nasty attrition rates out there sometimes. You know, you may think you might lose 3 to 5% of racers to withdrawals. I've seen races that had participation that was like 56, 58%. Now, it doesn't happen on a ton, but there have been those out there. Where those entries went, I don't know, but that's scary. You know, people talk about pre-entries being a guarantee to the promoter. It's not at all. It may give you an idea, but I've discovered that people like to have their name on lists. So just because somebody says they're pre-entering, until they roll through the gate, don't mean nothing. Anyway, what we do with Loose Rocker is we give a weekend entry discount. If you pay for all three races, when you come to the race, you get the discount right then and there. You know, it's open to everybody.
So being on your promoter end of the spectrum, who is the greatest drag racer you've ever seen do work at a racetrack? I have a pretty good idea of where you're going to go with this, but I'll let you go first.
I was involved in one of those pick the top 25 in the world kind of deals on Luke and Jed's podcast last year. And I'm like, you sure I can't pick like 300 people? I mean, this kind of sport is really a what have you done lately kind of deal. So depending on what time of day it is, you can pick somebody different.
I mean, I'm talking about a kind of like the old IROC NASCAR days. You don't know what you're driving until you get there. Top bulb, middle bulb, bottom bulb, doesn't matter. If you had to pick any racer that you've ever seen perform and stick him in a car he's never been in and throw him a challenge in front of him on how to drive the racetrack or the race car, who would you pick?
I don't know that I can narrow it down to one. I can probably get you down to three.
All right. Let's
fair enough.
Luke, Scotty, Peter. But that's going to be your tops about anywhere you go. You don't see Scotty run as much bottom bulb stuff, but he has run stock and super stock, and I've been on the wrong end of him every time I've raced him. So yeah, he's pretty good.
I believe he won the WFC 50 and never went back, right?
Wrong. He actually, they did the 50 2 years. He won both of them.
That's right. And then he hasn't been back since then. And I remember that story now.
Yeah, I was actually announcing the first year of the World Footbrake Challenge. And for whatever reason, the rollout was ridiculously loose that first year. Like Luke and Scotty were 40 in the tree to death. It has never, ever happened before or since, I don't think. But that proved how good those guys are at the finish line. Be 40 and win. The trick of bracket racing is to win all the rounds that you're supposed to win and then win a good chunk of the ones that you're not supposed to win.
And all the time, they forget how good of a drag racer Peter Biondo is just because he's not out there as much as he used to be. You know, whenever he won in Darlington or runner up, you know, in Darlington a couple of years back, he said, you know, I spend a lot of time at home with my family and that's where I want to be. But holy cow, that dude can drive a race car. I got to see it from the tower and I got to see the runs that he laid down. And, you know, the car wasn't phenomenal as you would think it would be, but he definitely made up for that.
Peter has come to one Loose Rocker event. Peter and Kyle Seipel were in the neighborhood checking out Gallant Motorsports Park just prior to signing that deal when they moved the Spring Fling there. They show up just for Saturday of the American Door Slammer Nationals presented by McCarty Auto Parts just for the 20 grander. And Peter's driving Anthony Bertazzi's Chevy 2. He's been in it one other weekend, and that was at the Million. And he gets to the track. I'm chatting with him in the staging lane. He said, I was watching at the Million. I said, the thing's moving after you set the brake. And I explained to him what I was seeing. And, oh, yeah, you're right. And he ties the line lock into it. And now the car's rock steady. And he just starts mowing through people. One of the coolest things I've ever seen. I'm hanging out on the starting line off to the side for the final round for 20 grand. And I'm close enough that I can see Peter let go and then look down at the steering wheel. Bump. Like it was so orchestrated. Like hit it. Okay. I missed it. Locate bump down button. Press bump down once. Boom. Done. He's like, I remember that. Peter's awesome. You know, I think you'd have to narrow down to Luke and Peter just as drag racers in general, because both of those guys, top ball, bottom ball, long skinny cars, door cars, they've both been in stockers. Done everything on that end of things. And they're also promoters. They're genuinely nice people, great families. And I've done work for both of them, done a lot of their event flyers, do the run stickers and things like that. Having had a chance to work with them behind the scenes, those two guys are nearly identical. You know, Luke will be going over a flyer proof and we'll discuss whether something needs to be a comma, a colon, or a semicolon, like my wife's a school teacher. You know, just everything is so detail oriented, and that really comes through on the track, off the track, with his promoter hat on, with his This Is Bracket Racing, his This Is Bracket Racing Elite programs. It's that attention to detail that really takes him a long way in this sport on so many aspects. Again, Biondo's the same way. Doing those spring flying flyers, you're talking one sheet of paper front and back. And at least in the early days, what Peter would email me was 11 pages of information, because it wasn't just here's the stuff. It was here's how I'd like it. And then it was here's how I like it. And here's how you could accomplish that. I'm like, I got that part of things. Okay. But, you know, after working with him for so long, you know, now it's rare that we have to go through very many revisions, because I know what to expect and I know what he expects. So I really enjoy working with both of those guys. You know, so phenomenal top to top.
When it's all said and done, where do you think a guy like Nick Hastings is going to rank up there in that ladder? Because he has accomplished many, many things and he's still very young.
Again, that when asked the question, it's one of those what time of day is it kind of things. In the last year or two, yeah, you absolutely positively got to put Nasty Nick up there. You know, he's earned that title. You know, it really proved that running the utility class at the Great American Bracket Race, you know, where they did that all on the same day, where they ran eighth mile, they ran 1,000 foot, they ran quarter mile, they did top ball, they did bottom ball in the same race from round to round. They changed it and he won that. It was no surprise. You know, I ran him at a practice tree race back in December, ran him 5 times. I actually lucked out enough to beat him 3 of those times, but I had to be 004 all 3 of the times to beat him and needed it. And then he beat me in the finals at a top ball race, and he's 001. So
you have an alibi for that race too. that was incredible to watch you two throw down at the, I think it was the Racing RVs race, right?
Yeah. Christmas Tree Extravaganza, Lee Neumeier, Mike Willie. Guys have just been, that was just their second year doing it, and they put together a really good event, and it'll be better next year. You know, it grew rather rapidly from the first year to the second year. They went to a much bigger venue, and they discovered just how many entries that they're going to get. So they'll reformulate stuff, and we'll try to get you home at a decent hour next time. But a great, great event. Watching, if they were just announcing the reaction times, you probably wouldn't have known if it was the bottom ball race or the top ball race. Nick is virtually identical top and bottom.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't even know if you could say he may be better off the bottom. I know I am. Randy Biddle Jr. is one of those guys that we're just like, Randy's good off the top, but some of us are just wired a little bit different. For me, on a practice tree, not a huge difference, but on a regular basis, my window, my spread, my average, I'll be 1, 2, 3 thou better off the bottom than I am off the top. Biddle went out and did that this year, where he run it up at a top ball race, hitting the bottom. I think he run it up out at the Vegas Million, hitting the bottom.
So Michael,
another one of those. There's, yeah, good guys.
Michael, I want, one of the questions I wanted to ask, and I may be missing the mark with this question, but I don't think that I am. To me, seemed like someone that's read a few books in your time. One of the books I've read that's helped me and that I reference often is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Is there a book that you've read? It's one of my, reason I'm asking is one of my New Year's resolutions that I want to read more. So is there a book that you read that you would recommend to somebody, even from just an entertainment? It doesn't have to be like self-help or improvement.
Sadly, I haven't had a chance to read much in many, many years, because I'm either on the road racing or working on promoting or working on my customers' decals or event flyers or big checks, run stickers, whatever.
Right.
I'm just so wide open that when I do have some free time, it's to sit down and watch TV or a movie or play a board game with my wife or play video games, something. So it's been a long, long time. You are right. When I was a kid, I read voraciously. I spent one summer where all I did was read, where I read like 15 books in 11 days or something. That's all I did was read. Stuff that I read growing up was typically your sci-fi or fantasy stuff. I was a big fan of J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, the Hobbit, Lord of the Rings series and that sort of thing. Really, the reading that I do now is not nearly as high-minded. My wife has a subscription to Marvel Unlimited, so I may read comic books before going to bed for a little bit each night. That's as far as I get. Really, a lot of my reading has been on social media. So it's, again, not real high-minded stuff, but I'm constantly thinking about something, I guess you would say, on a higher level, whether it's politics, which we don't even want to get into, or racing. Like, I've been fortunate enough that I have been involved with Luke Bagacki's This Is Bracket Racing.com off and on. I was one of his guest instructors years ago. When I was in college, I actually had started, you know, my Staging Light website before it was my graphic design business name, StagingLight.com, had started out as Michael Beard's Guide to Bracket Racing. Looking back on it now, it's really rudimentary, but it was a start. And I've just never had the time or the patience to really put an entire book together, which I could probably tick away at these days. But I had done a guest editorial for Luke. And then last year, as part of his This Is BracketRacing.com off-season practice tree challenge deal, he brought on some guest instructors on the second week, each of both the top bulb and bottom bulb. And I got to do one of the days of the bottom bulb deal as a guest instructor. So that was fun to try to share stuff. And I'll do that a lot on social media or at the racetrack. You know, somebody will send me a message or come up to me at the racetrack. Hey, what do you think about this? And my dad always told me, don't give away all your secrets. I never listened to that. I really enjoy talking about the sport and back to the very beginning of our conversation 3 hours ago. Talk way too much. I get that from my mom. It's breaking it down to its component parts. You know, how do I make this piece better? And I'll pay attention to discussions about guys running alcohol or nitrous, things that I don't do. It's just knowledge. And I'm storing it up in my head. You know, I'm not the guy that you want turning wrenches on your car. I'm afraid that I've had to work on my own stuff for a while now. People don't run screaming when they see me with a wrench in my hand anymore. Not that I know of. You know, but I pay attention to things. Guys have a problem with a car, and I'd be like, hey, this might be the solution here. You know, and they'll usually, Chip Johnson might ignore my advice for 2 weeks, 3 months, and he'll come back and say, man, I found out what my problem was. It was this. And I'm like, yeah, I told you that months ago. Yeah, you don't work on cars. I'm like, yeah, but I pay attention. You know, maybe it's not a tidbit of information that I need right now, but maybe somebody else needs it, or maybe I'm going to need it down the road. You know, I just try to be a student of the sport. You know, not as good as Luke in that regard, you know, but that's somebody that I really look up to because of that, you know, how he approaches teaching people. You know, and that's stuff that I really enjoy.
Luke is always very woke to what's going on around him, not only in his own program, but everybody else's as well. And I think that's something that everybody could aspire to be like, because, you know, to be on the edge of innovation, you have to be, you know, with the people that are doing the innovating.
Yeah, with my Guide to Bracket Racing deal that I wrote back in college, one of the things I remember writing was, you need to listen to everything. You know, maybe not all of it's right, but even if somebody tells you something that's wrong, go home, sort it out, figure out why it's wrong or why it's not right for you. Maybe you can find something. Well, that's not right, but if I do this, maybe I can make that work for me. And again, that's speaking pretty broadly, but again, take in as much information as you can and try to pick out the stuff that's going to be useful for your operation. Again, maybe you don't need it today. Maybe you need it down the road.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of the paying attention aspect of it was a question I was going to ask. What have you seen that kind of failed or an idea that you really think would take off that we could use in today's form of bracket racing? I mean, is there anything that people tried, you know, 20 years ago that really didn't fit the situation, but now there's more stuff out here now to accommodate it? Or, you know, I don't know if there's anything that would change the game.
When you put it that way, you know, what was working 20 years ago that maybe didn't for a while and now might actually be working again, I would say dialing honest. People's equipment is so much better now. It is ridiculous. I always have to laugh when I see people on social media talking about, oh, so-and-so's cheating. Everybody's doing this. Like who? Well, you know, those guys. Like who? Well, somebody's cheating. There's stuff out there. I'm like, dude, I got a big, fat, heavy door car on gas. It's fuel injected, but the O2 sensor has never worked. I've tuned it myself, and Mark Nowicki looked at my fuel map, and it looked like he sniffed some bad milk. His head snapped back so far. I'm like, this is all wrong. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. My car will print tickets. It's almost boring. Yeah, that car will do it. I'm pretty sure you guys that actually know what you're doing with, you know, everything that's out there from your chassis cars, dragsters. I've heard from a lot of people like Marco Bruzzi, Bruzzi Racing Transmissions Converters. He said he's run both Top Sportsman, Top Dragster, been world champ in both. You know, now he's doing some more bracket racing. He says the faster he makes that car go, the more consistent it is. And I'm like, where's the point of diminishing returns on those things? Guys are just printing tickets now. The strategies have been changing over the years. It used to be you out there and hold 5 or 10. Well, I know you're still doing that, Jake. I remember watching Luke at Mountain Park, 640s or something back in the day, and then see him at Bristol dialing 640s. And I'm like, Luke, what? You're dialed the same as I ran out of shoe polish. You know, and he'd be ripping at the 330. He doesn't do that anymore. You know, when you had a lot of guys that were dialing honest, and Judah, if you're 20 and one over, 30 pack, I'm sorry, if the guy's got any kind of decent light, yeah, if you're holding 5 or 10, you just set up on him, you take 00, you win. You know, it was really easy. When more and more people started holding, it became less and less of an advantage. You know, we like to call it high-speed chess, but if you're introducing more variables than you can control or can get rid of, if it becomes a guessing game, now you got a problem. The neat thing is you're seeing more guys dialing honest or closer to honest. When I say honest, you know, I may set the car up to run out by 2 thou. You know, I may want to run dead on with an 8 at worst if I miss. And, you know, if you've got that window there, I want to be close enough to be able to work against my opponent regardless of what he's throwing at me. Now guys are dialing hard and spraying to dead on at the end. Totally the opposite of holding on the dial. The strategies are changing. It's getting interesting.
So I've got two comments on this. The first one, I have to hold because there are three people in this chat right now, and two of them have won practice tree races. I'm just going to throw that one out there.
Your boy was 0 this weekend at practice tree race. Anybody can let go of a button. I didn't saw you 0.
Well, you know, blind squirrel finds a nut.
I saw that conversation with Plord.
Yeah. And you know, a guy like Plord, you got to do that. But another thing, you know, a testament to how good these cars are, you're right. You do want to set up a couple thou under every now and then, because going high dead on and going low dead on could be the outcome of the race completely.
Again, if you're running against somebody that's holding and knows how to drive both ends of the stripe, if you're going dead on 8, you're going to lose, because, again, that's a big enough window for them to get in on. Again, years ago in stock, I'd had the opportunity to run a couple of guys that were famous for holding a bunch of numbers, and it's as detail-oriented as I've ever been, figuring out lane differences, wind, you know, I would throw a gallon of gas in the car to be able to dial up one. I actually learned that one from Edmund Richardson by accident years ago. He was talking about being able to throw a little bit of weight in the car so he could dial up one and run dead on with a low number instead of dead on with a high number. Things like that.
I had a friend, Darren Schiffer. He did it with oil jugs and tried that a couple of times. Quart of oil was worth so much. Throw it in the truck.
Wow. Man, that's crazy for a bracket race. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, go to a loose rocker race and throw oil on the back for weight, and then just pray you don't hit the wall, because you will find out Michael Beard's bad side.
But the short version of that is, if you're running somebody that's holding a ton, if you're holding a ton, they're going to know it. You're not where you're supposed to be. I'd set the car up to run out by a couple of thou. If we're even on the tree, whatever they take, you know, you want them to be comfortable enough to want to take the stripe.
Yeah, so and
whatever they take, that's what you win the double rakeout by. And it worked a lot.
Yeah, I did a lot of racing with Scotty earlier this year, and or I guess it would be last year now. But, you know, and I ended up having to run him at Carolina, and I knew, being with him the couple months prior, you know, if it looks like this, he's usually going to bail, or if it looks like this, he's going to try to take a couple. So I ran him at Carolina, I think, for a sixth round of the 50K, and I was 10 take one, thinking he was going to bail, and he didn't.
Yep.
Just go ahead and go to the trailer.
So, Michael, as we wrap this up, we like to ask just a few quick questions, and my weekly one that I'm interested in. What is your go-to meal on race day?
I'm actually pretty bad about eating at the racetrack. I used to say a race good hungry. Actually said that this weekend. Jake probably remember that. The old IHRA races, they used to start setting up the winner's circle. You know, it'd be like the quarterfinals or something, and they'd set up winner's circle, and they would also put out this little spread of cookies and fresh fruit and stuff. And I'm like, I win this thing. I can go eat. Not real fussy, to be honest, on race day. On those really hot summer weekends, my awesome wife has put together a bunch of fresh fruit. And I'm not real good at taking care of myself, but if she prepares some stuff for me, I'll eat it. And that has actually helped a lot, keeping a lot of fluids in you when it's hot out. And that fresh fruit is real refreshing and keeps you going. Other than that, I'll grab whatever's at the concession stand. I'm easy.
Yeah, and I was surprised your answer was not McDonald's fries and Chick-fil-A sauce. You know, that works too.
Chick-fil-A sauce on pretty much anything. I knew I found a kindred soul this weekend, Zach, when Jake comes into the practice tree race, always fashionably late, and lays down the Chick-fil-A, and they finish off their meal, and they had one sauce packet left over that I don't, I've never heard the phrase leftover Chick-fil-A sauce is kind of like extra money. I don't even, it doesn't make any sense. But I said, man, you know, you can find, you can get like a big box, like 100-count Chick-fil-A sauce packets on Amazon.com. Jake's like, yeah, like $20. And I'm like, you've looked it up too.
Yeah, Jake rolls in with all this Chick-fil-A and he didn't bring any for me. I don't know what was up with that. Yeah, well, we got to share it, man.
Late already, and you know.
Yeah, I totally swiped his sauce. He left it there. It was not going to go unattended. So I had Chick-fil-A sauce on a Sunday. It was McDonald's, but I had Chick-fil-A sauce.
I'm actually except just waiting to see what meme you make out of this last weekend, because I'm sure that it's going to get interesting like it did in Ohio.
I didn't take any spy photos of you and Jenna rolling her eyes at you or anything this weekend. Now, that's not to say that there was not a lot of eye rolling and things. I just didn't get any photos this weekend.
So give me one guy that you've raced with many times in the past or currently that seems to be, you know, if you roll up next to this guy, you know that you have to deliver, or, you know, that's probably going to be it for the day. You know, a guy maybe like, for lack of better terms, a kryptonite, so to speak.
Well, sadly, that's most people these days. Like, again, my car spent a lot of time broke the last 2 years. So my last full season, go the year before that, I had won the World Foot Brake Challenge, had runnered up at two other 10 granders. And I'm like, it's easy. We're just going to keep doing that. So that following year, so my last full season, I'm going through my logbook. I'm like, man, here was a really good run. Oh, I ran David Bell. That didn't work out. Oh, here was a really good run I made. Oh, I ran Lucas Walker. That didn't work out. Oh, no, this was a good. Oh, I ran Nick Hastings. That didn't work out. So there's a lot of that going around. And I'm not afraid of anybody, but I know how to do math, and batting 500 ain't good enough in this sport. And I'd said that a lot at the first practice tree race. We were the Racing RVs deal. We were back in December. I ran Nick Hastings 5 times that night. I beat him 3 out of 5. Well, guess what? That means I lost twice. So, I mean, if you're double entered, it's not that double entering makes you better. The better guys happen to be the ones that double enter. So I found out, particularly that year, they call doubles to the lane. And I usually pull in an empty lane just because I hate sitting around. I really don't care which lane I run. You got to be comfortable in both. And I pull up there, and that lane's usually empty for a reason. So there will be David Bell, Lucas Walker, Nick Hastings, Bill, and Luke. Yeah, they're all lined up. You know, it doesn't matter if you beat them because they're going to buy back. They've got another entry. So good for you. It was the same way years ago running points at Rockingham. I could beat a lot of the best guys out there first or second round. Well, if they're double entered and got 2 rounds of buybacks, you get down to 8 cars, they're all still there. It's like Austin Powers. Why won't you die? You know, everybody's so good. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. People have good equipment. You know, all these online schools have been out there forever. You know, guys can learn in a month what it took us a lifetime to learn anymore. And so it's not going to get any easier. You know, maybe I wouldn't consider him, you know, number one in the world of bracket racing anymore, but I always have to go back to Myron Piatek. He's a former IHRA stock world champion. He was a guy, when I was a kid, Dad and I would go through the Mopar Performance catalog, and there was this Locomotion Challenger in there, and we're like, wow, that's a really cool car. We want to be like that guy someday. Later in life, I got to meet him, and he actually stayed at my house a lot. We got to split in hotel rooms when we ran stock together. But when you ran, Myron has no game at all. You will go. I've been in a final with Myron and told my buddy Randy Larson, I need to take 6 or less to beat him. Really? Yep. There is nothing more depressing on this earth than being behind Myron at the finish line. He ain't breaking out. You know, he's when I say dial honest, Myron is an honest dialer. He's going to be 0-20 if he misses it. And he's going dead on. So if you can get in on it, good for you. And I remember taking 12 that day and I lost. You know, so from that aspect, you know, it's a different challenge for different types of racer. You know, sometimes you execute it just right. Sometimes you don't. You know, if that wind light comes on, you'd be like, man, that was a great plan. Everything worked out. And you can do exactly the same thing the next time and the wind light doesn't come on. You know, it's just that kind of a sport anymore.
Yeah, you definitely have to be a good loser to be a drag racer nowadays, that's for sure. Or any time at that matter. You're going to lose a lot and you enjoy the times you win. Jake, you got any more questions?
Yeah, I have one more. Not really a question, but we had a person send a message to the podcast page a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And they said they're getting back into bracket racing after X amount of years off. And
if any of our guests had any suggestions how to go about, you know, what to pay attention to in the racing world now, or if you're just starting out, you know, what's the best tip you have to become the best bracket racer you could possibly be?
On a high end of stuff, I'd say get involved on thisisbracketracing.com, you know, or if Scotty's still doing his schools or whatnot, pay attention. You know, like, again, going back to the very beginning of our conversation, it was my job to figure out what this bracket racing stuff was about. And Dad would give me a handful of time slips and say, go talk to that guy. He knows what he's doing. You know, go talk to people at the racetrack. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Yeah, you know, we're proud of our cars, and half the time we're proud of what we just did on the racetrack. You know, most people will help you. So if you're new, don't be shy. You know, don't be afraid to ask a dumb question. You know, everybody got started somewhere. Now, for the racetracks, it would be good if you had some place for this new person or person returning to the sport. Unfortunately, there's a lot of racetracks around the country that do not have a trophy class or a street class. They've forgotten that farm system. That was a title of an article I wrote for Competition Plus magazine years and years ago. I still bring it up every once in a while. The farm system got to be a staging ground for people to get started in a sport beyond junior dragster or even junior street these days. You got to get the guy off the street, like we were talking about, Friday night street racing at Beaver Springs, or the Wednesday night thunder, or whatever they call it these days at Norwalk Raceway. Find a trophy class, find a street class, find something that's challenging for you, but, you know, is going to let you practice and work on your skills and be able to get somewhere. When we were down in North Carolina, I used to pester my wife all the time, not every week, but a couple times a year. Hey, do you want to race? No. I'm like, well, we can go to a test and tune and you can practice. And she's like, what's the point? Yeah, and she's a video gamer and she's very competitive. So test and tune didn't have any interest for her of just physically going down the racetrack. But the tracks that were around us in North Carolina at the time, there was no trophy class, no street class. So if she was going to race, she was going to run Richard Alford first round, or she was going to run me first round, or Scott Macy first round. You know, how are you going to get any practice? Because you're going to get beat a lot. So
you'll learn really quickly how it's supposed to look.
Well, if you're starting out in a slow car, no, you're probably not, because you're not used to judging a car that may be 3 seconds faster than you. How much did you see?
That's true.
It's just really tough. But after about 6 years of pestering her every once in a while, we're riding down the road one day and I said, hey, Rockingham's got their free race this weekend. You want to race? Yeah. What? Yeah, I'll race. Really? Yeah, because for years it was, I don't want to race. Why not? Well, I don't want to screw up. And I'm like, honey, that's what we do. If you had a perfect
if we didn't
screw it up because it meant you took too much stripe.
if we didn't screw up, you'd have to call us Kenny Underwood.
A lot of that going around these days. Yeah, so I'm like, okay, well, we'll take your Charger down. I'm not racing my car. Okay, well, take the Turismo down. There again, this is an epicycle. That's a tangent, 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 leading you back to the original thing we were talking about, the Turismo. I got my wife started in racing with the Turismo, 4-cylinder front-wheel drive car. Got slicks on it. It's got a manual valve body in it. You have to do a burnout with it. You have to shift it. She's out there deep staging the thing. Her first hit time runs, she's like 120 on the tree. Comes back cussing like a sailor. And I'm like, that's fine. It's your first hit. Her second time run, she's like 60 on the tree. Comes back cussing like a sailor. And I'm like, you just cut your light in half. I'm like, there's still guys that'll. I've seen guys that were worse than 60 this weekend at the practice tree race. No names, but guys will still do it. So, oh, by the way, we're running 8th mile at Rockingham. It's like driving down the interstate. He's like, I don't know where the finish line is. It's not really that well marked. You haven't been down the racetrack twice. So I'm like, all right, I got you dialed hard. Just keep your foot in it till the wind light comes on. Her first round of competition of her entire career, she draws Dunn Benson's track champ. She had a better package than his light. By Monday of that week, you could see the car get more and more consistent. She got more comfortable with the burnout process because line lock don't work on a thing either. So you just got to mat it and grab second gear about $6,000. It's really kind of fun for a slow car. So she's getting better with that. There's a group of like a dozen people hanging around the starting line just watching her. Like Chris Plotts at the ready line. I'm behind him. And she's deep staging this car going low tens at the time. And I wasn't sure that third light was even on yet. Like the second and third were switching. And I swear that car started to move. And Plot later said, that green light came on and I about threw up on my steering wheel. And she got into money her first weekend out. And
she undersold and over-delivered.
Yes. And she's raised one weekend's it.
Well, Michael, this is the point where we allow you to have your shameless plugs, if you would like so, on Loose Rocker and Staging Light and whatnot.
You can always find all of our information at looserocker.com. Our first line of putting information out is always on our Loose Rocker Facebook page. Just type in Loose Rocker in the search bar on Facebook. First event will be coming up at Virginia Motorsports Park, March 15th through the 17th for both Top ET and Foot Brake, a 5, 10, and 5 for $290. The House of Pain Performance St. Patrick's Classic. Hope you'll join us. And again, check out looserocker.com or our Facebook page. You can see our entire race schedule. We've got races for Top, for Foot Brake, door car only, specialty events, upwards of 40 granders, and specialty events for Foot Brake as well. So hope you can join us for the type of event that fits you and fits your schedule. We'll see you out on the racetrack.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you moved my my closest chance to joining one of these Loose Rocker races that I've been wanting to go to. So I'm no longer at Kilcare, so I got to drive to Virginia. That's my next closest location, but it's definitely worth the trip. Thank you for coming on, and we really appreciated it. The conversation was incredible. You know, we figured if we kind of just gave you a platform and let you go, it'd be nothing short of spectacular, and that's exactly what it was.
Long, if not spectacular, yeah. I really appreciate your guys' time. Zach, I'm sorry you didn't get to say more than 12 words the whole time.
No, it's all right. I enjoyed listening. I like you, and like you said, you have to be a good listener to learn, so I was definitely trying to be a student, and we really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this with us, and nothing but the best of luck on all fronts, the racing, the graphics, and Loose Rocker Promotions. You guys got great things going there. Keep up the good work.
Thanks very much again. Really appreciate you guys' time, and great job on what you guys have been doing with the Dialed In podcast. So always thank nice you. To have another voice out there.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. We will we'll see you in the practice restaging lane somewhere near in the near future. So the dragsterforsale.com practice tree race was the best practice tree race year to date so far. Here just a few quick words from our friends at the practice tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing.
Saturday, February 23rd, the return of the biggest little practice tree race in the land, the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing, featuring the best and baddest practice tree drag racing on this side of the Mississippi. The Loose Rocker Promotions Animal Eliminator, guaranteeing $3,000 to the winner and a free weekend entry to the St. Patrick's Classic at Virginia Motorsports Park. The Adams Racing Big Dog Shootout makes its debut, giving away a K&N Spring Fling Million Weekend Package valued at over $2,600 to the winner in the 64-entry field. For the Bottom Bulbers, the World Footbrake Challenge Bottom Bomb Blitz makes its return with a $1,000 payday going to the last man standing and a weekend entry to the World Footbrake Challenge at Bristol Dragway. 782 Township Road 101 in West Salem, Ohio, just 3 miles south of Dragway 42. Gates open at 1, racing at 4. Come on back to the biggest little practice tree race in the land, the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing. Be there!
All right, so for this week's In Motion Solutions final round, well, we covered the topic of the pre-entries in our discussion, so I hope you all enjoyed the interview with Michael Beard. We're going to talk about our contest. You know, we're giving away sponsorship proposal professionally done by Jeff Lambert, racesponsorships.net. He's helped a lot of racers obtain sponsorship. If you've been paying attention to his Facebook page, it seems like every single day there's another racer, another race team announcing a sponsorship that they got through help of Jeff Lambert getting a proposal for them. So we want to make sure you guys know next week we're going to narrow it down. We're going to announce two that we're going to pick. So I hope that everybody that wanted to get in is in, and that you all take advantage of this great offer that we're trying to give to you.
Yeah. And you know, the contest has gone international, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's crossed borders and whatnot, but you know, for a limited time offer, we're going to offer you this contest for $0. It's a limited time fire sale. So I think it's worth $300 at regular price whenever Jeff's not running a special, right?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the number is, but somewhere in that neighborhood, I think, is is correct. And you know, I can tell you personally that General Jeff has helped me. You know, he helped me out with a Seabert performance deal. I couldn't be happier. He is a great guy, and he'll keep you on track as far as getting done what you need to get done to do this. Couldn't ask for having a better guy on your side. So, you know, we're happy to be able to do this for you guys, and thank you for all of you that have entered. And if you all haven't listened to that episode with Jeff Lambert and everything, or interview with him, and you know how in depth he goes, go back and listen to it. You know, take a listen. That way, you know, you're getting an idea of the knowledge that this guy has. So, I mean, it definitely is a definitely would be advantageous to get in on this contest, don't you think, Jake?
Yep, I would agree wholeheartedly, and I think that we're doing a decent job of bringing you content here in the months that have not a whole lot of racing results, so bear with us. We're going to be back on a racetrack here soon, and we'll have a whole lot more to talk about. But until then, you know, we get the chance to sit down with people like Michael Beard and Jeff Lambert and Langdon and J.R. Todd and Brian Lones and guys like that, because, you know, they're not in their busy season yet either. So I think we'll have a pretty cool guest here coming up. We won't really name drop him yet because we don't want him to get too big of a head, but maybe next week we'll have our buddy on here from, we'll just say, down south. But I think that'll do it. Episode 19, Zach. I'm not sure what entails this weekend. There's a practice tree race in Ohio, the Let Go Triple O Showdown, I believe.
Yeah, there's one down in Alabama, too.
There's one in Alabama. Yep.
Jeremy Royster's putting on.
Yep, the slot car Winter Nationals is at Bullitt in Louisville this weekend. There's plenty of opportunities to go compete. Just get out there and do it.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you all for joining us. Still got sets of stickers left at a couple guys. Man, I can't believe I forgot to bring them to the practice tree race last weekend. And a couple guys asked me while I was there, of course, and they were sitting at home. So hit me up. Just send me a message. We'll get those out to you. So we certainly appreciate all the support, everybody listening to us and sharing and telling your friends. Please do so. And we're going to keep bringing you the best content that we can every week.
Yep, absolutely. We'll see you guys in the practice tree staging lanes or vice versa, the slot car staging lanes. We'll see. Episode 19, I think that'll do it, Zach.
That'll do it. Thank you, guys.